There is a lie in relationships that nearly all of us believe. When conflict comes, here's what we think. If that person would just change, if they would get their act together, if they would shape up, then this relationship would work. There's a lie in there that's destructive, and I'm going to share what it is and how to change. Stay with me.
Well, thanks for joining us for this Wednesday edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Living on the Edge features the Bible teaching of Chip Ingram on this daily discipleship program. I'm Dave Gruey, and today Chip continues his series, God's Wisdom for Building Great Relationships. Now, just before we get started, let me encourage you to try using Chip's message notes while you listen. They'll help you follow Chip's outline and get the most out of today's teaching. They're a quick download when you go to livingontheedge.org. Just click Listen Now. So let's jump in and join Chip for principle number 8, the only person I can change is me.
We're in a little series on relationships, and I would like to suggest that I'm going to talk about a disease that I call chronic relatedness. I've made up this word myself. It's chronic relatedness. This is the last principle about the life lessons that I've learned about relationships. And there's a lot of great things I've learned, and been a Christian a little over 30 years. And I didn't learn much the first couple years because I wasn't in the Bible regularly. And I didn't do any of the things that all good Christians told me to do. And then I kept hitting the wall and decided, I think I'm going to get in the scriptures, and I think I'm going to join a small group. And I began to grow. And so for the last 32 out of the last 34 years, of all the things I've learned about relating to people, probably overcoming what I call chronic relatedness. And it's one of the most difficult things to deal with in any relationship when someone, I mean, perpetually acts or treats you in a way that either causes inward concern or outward conflict. Okay, that's what I mean by chronic relatedness. Someone, usually they're in your network. I mean, they can actually be a clerk. I mean, if they're really a jerk, or she's really a jerk, and you happen to buy coffee at the same place, and they treat you disrespectfully and are super negative every single time, it's not like you have to deal with them too much. But I'm talking about those people in your relational network who act in a way or treat you in a way that either causes you constant concern for fear and concern about them or the impact, or it causes constant conflict. Let me give you a few illustrations. Okay? You're married to a husband who's not spiritually sensitive, has no desire for God, no desire for the Bible, and no desire for church, and he sits on the recliner Sunday morning with the Coors Light watching NFL football as you get the kids and walk out the door to church, and you're concerned about his soul, and you're concerned about his own life, and you're concerned about the impact on your kids. And you have nagged, and you have tried, and you have left the Bible open, and you've left the radio on the right station in the car, and for the last 10 years, no change. That's what I call chronic relatedness. Or you're the husband and you're married to a wife who's constantly critical, makes jokes, has these little put-downs in public. When you go out with people at a dinner or different times like this, it's always in the form of joking and jabs, but she jabs about your looks, she jabs about your work, she jabs about your family, she jabs about your background, and everyone thinks it's funny, but you don't. And you've talked to her about it. And you've told her about how it makes you feel. And for some reason, she doesn't get it. Or it's the in-laws who are negative and critical with every visit, every letter, every phone call. When they visit, what you know is anything that's not right in the house, anything that's not right with your parenting, anything that's not right with anything, you're going to hear about it. And they do it in this syrupy, like we really care attitude that they really want to help you. And you know, underneath of it is the same old junk you've had for the last 17 years. And you get a letter from them or a phone call from them. And even when they remotely do things that are positive, there's always this little inward barb on the inside that pokes about how, you know what, if you were a better father, if you were a better mother, if you'd watch your house better, you know what, you need to keep that clean because you don't keep that clean. You know what, this could happen. When's the last time you got your chimney cleaned out? Because you know the creosote down inside. You know, kids, I read something in the paper the other day that talked about kids that eat those kind of vitamins. You know, there's artificial coloring in it, and you just want to go and it's just chronic. Or the child who's constantly disrespectful even after multiple disciplines. I mean, you have grounded them. Earlier when they were younger, you spanked them. They just came out of the womb disrespectful. They seem to be disrespectful. They are disrespectful. You think they will always be disrespectful. And you have multiple conversations with them, multiple conversations with your mate. And you just feel like it's just chronic. What do you do? Or the boss, employee, or fellow worker that constantly has a negative attitude, is sarcastic and cynical, and nothing is ever right perspective. It doesn't matter if you just broke through the next goals, if you got a promotion, if everyone's worked as a team. This person has an attitude and a lens that no matter what happens, is life is bad, life it stinks. They can take the most positive situation and they are spin masters. They can see the downside of everything. And all you know is that every time you're with them, you have these little knots in your stomach, or every time you're around them, you just think thoughts like, can't they ever say or be positive? There's always just, you know, the sarcasm, the cynicism. Even when something good happens, they can figure a way to say, well, so-and-so's motives probably weren't right, and it probably is not really true. And yeah, it's better now, but it'll probably be just like it always was 3 weeks from now. And you live with these people. And so before we go on, I'd like you, because your faces are telling me you're beginning to really track with me, I would like you to think of who is that person or persons in your life, in your relational network, that you would say you are experiencing chronic relatedititis. In other words, if there's one person that would come to your mind right now and you could say, oh God, give me a magic pill. And when they look the other way, I could give them this magic pill and it would change whatever it is, who would they be? They would start being positive. They would start being sensitive. They would be open to God. They would begin to communicate. They would, whatever it is, who in your relational network, family, in-laws, fellow workers, neighbor, is just someone that if they would change, I mean, you've talked to them, you've prayed about it, you've kind of had the heart-to-heart, or you've never had the heart-to-heart because one of the issues is they have anger management issues and they blow up, and so you've decided, you know what, I've tried that twice and I'm not going to go there again. But if that would change, who is that person that you would really like to see really change? And if they changed, I mean, I don't think this is bad, but down deep in your heart you would say, that would be so nice for me. You know, my world, my life, my family, my work environment, it would be so much better if so-and-so would change either this behavior or this action or how they treat me or someone I love. If that would change, then my relational world would be a lot better. Have you got that person in your mind? It usually doesn't take very long. And now I want to give you principle number 8. And like always, I'll give you a principle, a passage, and a practice. And the principle I have is the only person I can change is me. The only person I can change is me. I can try nagging, I can try manipulation, I can try threats, I can try yelling, I can try the silent treatment, I can try passive-aggressively paybacking in very subtle Christian-type ways to execute vengeance. But when all of that doesn't work, what I've learned is when I'm in a relational situation, that the reality of that relationship either causes me deep concern or ongoing conflict, the biggest lesson I've learned is the only person I can change is me. And if you'd open your Bibles to Luke chapter 6, I want to develop something out of a little bit of obscure text, because you're going to say to yourself, how does this passage have to do with that principle? Luke chapter 6, it says, in fact, I put in the passage on your notes, it says, give and it will be given unto you. They will pour it out in your lap, a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over. For by your standard of measure, it will measure to you. Give and it will be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. The idea is, as I give to other people in the same measure, and the idea of a measure is like if I gave a cup full, I'd get a cup full back. If I gave a gallon full, I'd get a gallon full back. If I gave a 55 gallon away, I'd get a 55 gallon. Whatever measure I give out to others, he says, it'll come back to you. And he's using a farmer's or agricultural metaphor here, because if you want to get more grain or more something, the idea, shake down, running over, it's the idea that, you know, if you shake something, you can keep making more room to put more in. So it's the idea of abundance. Give to other people and you'll, you know, get back good measure, not just shaken down, running over in abundance back into your lap. The relational application I want to make is that whatever you most need in a relationship, the thing you most want from the relationship, but are not receiving, give it away. This is the ultimate counterintuitive opposite way. We have a tit for tat mentality. I'll be kind to you if you'll be kind to me, and I'm waiting for you to be kind to me so I can be kind to you. I will respect you when you respect me. I will do for you once you do for me. And what I'm saying is, when you hit chronic relatedness and you've tried all the different ways to change this person and he's still on the recliner, and she is still dissing you in public, and that kid is still disrespectful, and that fellow employee or boss, whatever, is still making you nuts, and nothing is changing, give them whatever you really want to receive from them. I'll give you a list in some practical ways what I'm talking about. If you're in a relationship where you want more time from the person, give them time. Give them time. If you want more attention from someone, maybe it's in a marriage relationship, give them attention. If you need more affection in a relationship, ask yourself, what in this friendship, in this marriage, or in my relationship with my father or mother or one of my kids, what does affection look like to them? And if what it is my dad or mom's never said, I love you. My kids, whatever, they're going through this stage and they're not very affectionate. My mate is not near as affectionate as I would like them to be. Give it away. Give, and it'll be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken over. If you want someone to listen to you, you don't feel like you're really being heard, give that away. Start listening to them in new ways. Start asking the second and third and fourth penetrating question instead of saying, you never listen to me. See, you interrupted me again. See, you, not that any of you have ever done that. If you want to be understood, take a week and say, I'm going to be a student of this person and I want to understand them instead of expecting or wanting them to understand me. If you want someone to be more sensitive to them. If you want comforted by a person, comfort them. If you want them to be kinder, if you want them to be more thoughtful and give you gifts to indicate that, you know, because that's part of your love language and you feel like, you know, that happened in the early days when you were married, or, you know, your parents used to be sensitive in some of those areas, then give them gifts. In other words, whatever you need most in a relationship, give it away. Give and it'll be given unto you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken, running over back into your lap. Now I can, your faces are looking at me. This is really wonderful. Your faces are looking like me, like, you don't get it. You obviously don't know the person that came to my mind, or you wouldn't say something like this, because that's not fair. You know, in fact, the real issue is, when I look at who's giving in this relationship, this is a 90-10-er. I'm already giving 90% and I get 10 back. And I get 10 back like on not a good day, a good week. I get 10 back on a good year. And so that's not fair. And what I want to say is, you're right, it's not fair, it's supernatural. The other thing I want to do is ask you now in your Bibles to turn back and let me give you a little context. Where did this verse come from? Jesus, in the opening of Luke, has done two things that seem outrageous. He's violated the Sabbath two different times, eating one time, and then after that he heals a man. And then after that he goes up onto a mountain and he calls the disciples to himself. And then he descends down and he's going to give the Sermon on the Mount. And he comes to a level place and there's a great multitude and there's his disciples and all these people. And he begins to teach and he begins to heal and he begins to do all the things to meet the needs of other people. And then he gives that classic beginning of that message that we know, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are those who hunger and thirst. And he gives those classic beatitudes. But when he gets done with those, then picking it up at verse 27, He says, but I say to you who hear, notice, I say to you who hear, I'm talking to those of you, I just gave a sermon. I gave it with my disciples here and all this multitude, but I say to you who hear, translation, if you get it, if you really understand what I was trying to say, but I say to those of you who hear, love your enemies and do good to those who hate you. Bless those who persecute you and pray for those who mistreat you. Whoever hits you on the cheek, literally the right cheek, offer him the left. And whoever takes away your coat, don't withhold your shirt from him as well. Give to everyone who asks of you, and whoever takes away what is yours, do not demand it back. And just as you want men to treat you, treat them in the same way. And I mean, imagine, those are great Jesus words, right? They put them on plaques in Christian bookstores, and I mean, they sell like hotcakes. Can you imagine being in that crowd for the first time and having a good developed sense of justice like we all have, and hearing about how blessed you can be if you realize your need, if you hunger for God, if you long to be the man or woman and you want to follow him? And then he says, now, by the way, if you understood what I just said about the supernatural life with me, then bless those who persecute you. Pray for those who mistreat you. The picture isn't just of pacifism. Matthew 5, he talks about if someone hits you on the left cheek, and most of us are right-handed. And so basically, this is Vicky, be careful here. This is Vicky's right cheek, it says. And so, with my right hand, I have a hard time hitting her. So really, this is more of, I'm using the back of my hand, I'm disrespecting the person. I'm really dissing them, and I'm saying, what you think and who you are. And he's saying, you know what? Don't allow yourself to get pulled into. Instead, so what do? You just turn and give them the other cheek. That passage doesn't teach that there's never a time to defend yourself and in light of all the rest of the Bible, but what it's capturing is giving the very opposite of what the person deserves. Isn't that the thing that we can say, from all of these? You give the very opposite of what the person deserves. And this is Jesus' relational model. But then notice he goes on, because, that part of us that's deep inside that says this isn't fair, he goes on to say, picking it up in verse 32, and if you love those who love you, what credit is that? For even sinners love those who love them. Verse 33, and if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that? For even sinners do the same thing. And if you lend to those from whom you expect to receive credit, what credit is that to you? Even sinners lend to sinners in order to receive back the same amount. In other words, when you're just dishing out what other people dish to you, or when you're playing the tit-for-tat game, you're just part of the human race. But that's not like a follower of Jesus. That's not a supernatural response. That's not how relationships work. And then he goes on to say, but love your enemies and do good and lend and expect nothing in return. And notice here's where now the faith kicks in. Your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he himself is kind to whom? To the ungrateful and evil men. We're never more like God, and we're never more like his son Jesus than we give people what they don't deserve. He says that phrase, you'll be sons of the Most High. In other words, people will recognize. I mean, I'm with my kids and they act a certain way. Oh, you must be Ingram's boy. Or, they got all that blonde hair and they say, oh, this is one of Teresa's kids. Why? There's family resemblance. You have family resemblance to God when you treat people in a way they don't deserve.
Oh, my. What a challenge. All I can think of is, Lord, we need your strength, because loving like that doesn't come easy. Well, if you're like me, sometimes a message creates more questions than answers. So if this message sparked a question in your mind, please send it to chip@livingontheedge.org. Chip will be in studio on Friday to answer as many of your questions on relationships as possible. Again, send your questions on relationships to chip@livingontheedge.org. And be sure to tune in on Friday to hear his answers.
As I travel around the United States and speak at churches, college campuses, pastors' conferences, military personnel, there is one theme that just keeps coming out. It doesn't matter where I speak or who I'm with. It's the family, it's communication, and it's relationships. Now, here's the thing. There's a lot that goes into building a strong family. Great communication and doing that for different groups is certainly a challenge. But that's why we're committed to continuing to teach the Bible regularly, practically, and relevantly. We're committed to develop group resources and online courses that help people personally apply the truth to their life. And we're committed to having fun with families and creating tools that allow families to get together and enjoy one another and share their hearts. Each one of those has their place. And here's what I would ask you. Would you be willing to help us create these and then get them in the hands of families all across America? It takes resources. And I'm so grateful for those of you that pray and partner with us financially. And I want to thank you first. And second, if you don't partner with us financially now, would you consider partnering financially and helping us do what families desperately need? Thanks so much for praying about it and then doing whatever God shows you to do.
Well, if that mission resonates with you, we'd love to have you join us. To give a gift today, just give us a call at 1-888-333-6003. Or if you prefer to give online, you can donate securely by going to livingontheedge.org. Your generosity is greatly appreciated. Well, now here's Chip with a final thought.
As we wrap up today's program, we all have a variety of relationships. And every relationship, good relationships, have they have mountaintops and they have valleys. They have challenges. I could sit down with you now, being married for, you know, over 40 years. I could tell you about seasons when your children are really young and the teen years and the empty nest years. And there's peaks and valleys and very predictable challenges that bring huge conflict. And a number of couples don't make it through that. They get locked in and there's hurt and there's pain and your needs aren't met. And what happens is there's this absolute commitment that this person must change for this relationship to work. But the this person is not you. It's them. And the problem with that is you have zero power to change your mate. You have zero power to change your boss. You have zero power to change one of your kids. You have zero power to change your roommate. And this principle has been so helpful to say, the only person I can change, here's where it has to begin, with me. Even if in my heart of hearts it's 10% my problem, 90% their problem, the temptation is to focus on the 90%. We were as stuck as you could be in our marriage in the early years, and we spent a couple years blaming dysfunctional ways to sort of try and make our marriage work. And it just got to where it was impossible, and I think we both got so frustrated, but the breakthrough came when we went to counseling, and when we both accepted the only person we could change is us. I couldn't change her, and she was making me nuts, and she couldn't change me, and believe me, I was making her nuts. And so here's your application, just today, pause right now. Think of the most challenging relationship and just ask this one question and make this one commitment. The question, oh Lord, what do you see needs to change in me? Then, what do you want me to do today? One step to give this other person what they don't deserve. How could I show kindness or grace even though I don't think they deserve it? You answer that question and act on it, and you will see the beginning of change.
You know, a great way to stay engaged and connected to Chip and Living on the Edge is with the Chip Ingram app. You'll get free access to all of Chip's recent messages, his message notes, and much more. And not only that, but it couldn't be easier to call or email directly from the app. Well, tomorrow Chip continues his series, God's Wisdom for Building Great Relationships. So I hope you'll make plans to join us then. For Chip and the entire team here, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.